Hello and welcome to Cast Airbus. My name is Christian Corley. Now, in a little while, I'll be joined by James McLean and a couple of guests. I'm speaking to Gareth Kavanagh and well-regarded artist Adrian Salmon, whose work you may know from some of the Doctor Who animations of missing episodes, or from Doctor Who magazine, where he illustrated the Cybermen cartoon strip, and, most pertinently for this conversation, the Time Team series of articles, which featured an illustration each month for each episode, more or less. A new Kickstarter, the Time Team Unearthed, which I mentioned in last week's podcast, is the focus of our discussion today. It ends on the 29th of December. It's already past its target, but there are many reasons why you should still back this project, which looks absolutely superb if Doctor Who related artwork is something that you are interested in. So that's enough from me. Here is myself talking with Gareth Kavanagh and Adrian Salmon, and James McLean's with us as well.
Gareth, I expected more from the king of Instagram.
I'm a visual man, you know. Audio is not really for me.
It suits me.
But talking Instagram, have you guys seen that incredible 28 years later trailer yesterday?
Oh no, I knew it's happening. I haven't seen the trailer.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, I absolutely can't. Well, have you seen it yet, Aid?
No, I haven't, but I thought it had gone up, but I haven't a chance to look at it yet. No. Cool. I'll give it a watch.
Give it a whirl. If no one else has watched it, that's the end of the conversation then, isn't it? I've seen it.
You three haven't. That's
it. Well, I'm glad we've spent this whole 20 minutes leading up to this one statement. Thanks, Gareth. Yeah. My time's well spent.
Oh, okay. Let's get on with it. The reason we are gathered is to discuss a new project that Gareth is producing and working on with Agent Salmon. Gareth Kavanagh and Agent Salmon both join us. The Time Team Unearthed is a new Kickstarter project compiling, I think, the Doctor Who art of Agent Salmon from the Time Team articles in Doctor Who magazine. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Go on, Aid. It's your art. You introduce it. I think it's brilliant. That's all I can say. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's the artwork from the feature that ran in Doctor Who magazine called The Time Team. And each issue I do an illustration to cover the story that the people who were kind of watching the series from the start were watching that month. And it just sort of went on right through to, we went into the, it did all the classic stuff. And then we did the started the new Who stuff, yeah. But that until it got sort of you know, just got stopped suddenly somewhere through Matt Smith's era. But the book I'm doing with Gareth is covers the classic series, so it ends with the TV movie, I think, isn't it, Gareth?
Yeah, it's a TV movie, which, do you know, I don't remember you guys doing the TV movie. I could have sworn that it just kind of stopped at...
We definitely did it, yeah.
I've seen the pictures.
So I don't doubt it, but I don't remember it. Isn't that odd?
There you go.
It's a really, really special book. It's a book I've wanted to do. I think me and Aid have been talking about this for at least 10 years, haven't we?
Oh,
It's a book I've wanted to do for ages and ages and ages, because it was the genuine highlight. I don't know about you guys, but for me, during that run, and it must have run about, what, 8-9 years, Time Team, Aid? It must have been something like that.
Yeah, it felt like about 40, but yeah, I remember
selling it
initially. when Gary Gillett offered me the job, he said, "Oh, yeah, it's going to be 7 years worth of work." I thought, "Oh, that's great." He said, "However, each illustration is only £40, just to temper it a bit there." But I was like, "Yeah, you know, I'm in." You know, it was, and it went on a lot longer than 7 years.
It did, and you know, it was the highlight. It was the absolute highlight of getting a new Doctor Who magazine in that time, because it's in the Wilderness era it launches, which I always think is the most interesting period for Doctor Who magazine, because, you know, because they just, they've got free reign to go anywhere they want, to say anything they want. And, you know, lots of people do these marathon watches now, but I think that was the very first one. And it was things that you couldn't see. You know, you couldn't sit down and go, right, this week we're going to watch The Savages somehow. You just couldn't. So it collects it all together, and it does something new as well, because of the format of the Time Team itself. It was, I think it started off quite weirdly that they would not do a story at a time, but they would do 8 episodes at a time. And sometimes these episodes would straddle several stories. Yeah. So there were stories that were missed out, you know, because Adrian originally would only do one picture. So you've been working on some new ones as well, Adrian.
Yes, we've basically been filling in the gaps. Will Brooks, our designer, he came up with a list of stories that hadn't been done, and we're doing them all basically. I'm doing them the same way I did them, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, but albeit they're coloured on computer now.
Okay, Gareth, the Time Team Unearthed Kickstarter project launched a few days ago, and then it was fulfilled almost straight away.
Yeah. That's always a big relief, that. I don't mind saying, because it was a bit of a punt in many ways. I mean, I knew the book would be brilliant, but, you know, we didn't do any pre-publicity, because we were all quite busy. I'm not saying that was by design, but we just literally turned it on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, Will Brooks was hosting it. So we just said, oh, should we go live? Yeah, let's go live. And we just turned the switch. And I think in the first hour, I mean, I don't mind saying this, it was really scary in the first hour, because I think we'd raised about £50. And I thought, oh God, what have we done? And then it was something amazing. It just really caught fire just by itself, and through social media, and suddenly people going, oh my God, it's an Adrian Salmon art book. I've wanted this for ages. And then we raised 10 grand in 24 hours, which was amazing. And I know for you, Aid, it was quite something, wasn't it? Seeing all that appreciation.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, I didn't expect it. I thought maybe we'd get 2 or 3 grand, and then we'd be like, you know, sort of, you know, in the fields, you know, working it all the way to the end and stuff. But for my ego, if nothing else, to fulfill itself in 24 hours, you know, that's pretty good. But it's when you work as a freelancer, and you know, it feels like it's a long time since I did the Time Teams. They just seemed like something that was, you know, one of those things I did. For people to actually still have the interest and still want a book like this is quite humbling, really, to be honest. And it is good, because, you know, you talk to any artist and they'll say, oh, would you like an art book of your work in? Well, absolutely. You know, it's like one of those little odd dreams that you have. And I just like the idea, because I've done so much with Doctor Who under this Time Team umbrella, which is how Gareth sort of sold it to me. I was like, yeah, perfect. It just gives us that envelope to show all this different stuff in it. And because it went on so long, my style sort of evolved over the time. So there's lots for me to talk about, because I'm doing a commentary for all the artwork, basically, a written commentary. And I've done the Hartnell and Troughton ones, and I was really surprised that stuff came back to me really quite quickly once I'd refamiliarized myself with some of the stories. It's hopefully it'll be interesting to people to see the, you know, the sort of mindset. And it's been good to redo some of the newer ones. We've done the Daleks so far, or I've done the Daleks. The Highlanders, Savages, what's the other one, Gareth?
Mythmakers.
No, I'm working on the Mythmakers, yeah. And
Edge of Smuggling. Destruction.
Yeah. End of Destruction. So anyway, it was just getting back into that mindset. It didn't take long, and I was sort of it's been a lot of fun, you know. And I've been really enjoying it.
And it has to be said, it's a beautiful looking book as well, you know, and full kudos to Will Brooks, you know, our incredible designer and editor on this, because, you know, I've seen a lot of these art books over the years, and a lot of them have underwhelmed, you know. They seem to be, you know, they're trying to do too much, they're trying to cram too much in. This is such a gorgeously simple and it's clean and you can enjoy the art. And it wasn't it your wife, Aid, that said it was like an art gallery, and I liked that.
Mm. Yeah, she said that she liked the way that there was a bit of white around the illustrations, and it made it feel like you were walking through a gallery looking at them. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, actually.
There is something to be said for full colour, full page books, but they do overwhelm, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. This is all in Will's. This is Will's thing. I mean, I liaise with him a lot, but I don't sort of. He's the guy that's designing it. I just give him the pictures, really, and the words, and he weaves his magic then with that, and he's good with coming up with ideas as well. And you know, he's just a decent, nice bloke. So yeah, yeah.
So were there any? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go on.
The usual me driving things along. I was going to say we've got 18 days to go. There's 115 backers already. You've got £11,699 pledged of your 10,000 target at this point, as we discussed this. What reason would anyone have to continue to support this if somebody wasn't supported it and they've seen that it is going to come out in print later on anyway? What's the bonuses?
Well, the bonuses is, I mean, obviously, you're right. The book, the softback and the hardback, will be available in our web store, and it'll be available through Diamond distributors for comic shops all over the world. So, you know, everywhere in the world, if you've got a local comic shop that subscribes to Diamond, you can buy it. So 100%. What you get here is that you can pledge more, but you get more. So there's packages where, I mean, all the top tier packages, £350 packages, went, I think, within about 8-9 hours.
Yeah.
And for that, they were very special because you got lots and lots of merchandise and prints and postcards and signatures and special one-off covers. But you also got an actual original piece of art for the 26 new time teams that Adrian's doing. But they've all gone. But there are still plenty of tiers with merchandise on there. And what we've agreed to do, which we do on Kickstarter, which is quite exciting, is we've agreed to stretch goals. So what that means is if people keep backing this over the next 18 days, as our raise gets higher, so we will give you stuff. So we've opened up the first three tiers, which I think takes us to about 15 grand, which should be very doable, which means that there'll be extra pages in the book where Adrian's got incredible private commissions, you know, that he's done over the years. They're sort of classic Who themed. You'll be able to see those for the first time. And excitingly, we're kind of then going to put more original art in. So we've looked at our parameters and we've gone, actually, we should really, there's no reason we shouldn't be including Sharda. We should be including Slipback, and we've also got the Pescatons, which I know you'll have a lot of fun with. So
yes.
So those are so they're the tiers, and we've got three more stretch goals to announce once we get to 15 grand, and they're really exciting. I mean, they are, I wish I could talk about them now because I don't want to jinx it because they're so good. So if people will generously keep backing us and sharing it, you will get more. But if you haven't got money at the moment, don't worry. The book will always be available to order in the future. And, you know, and the thing that really matters is the beautiful book full of beautiful art.
Slight interruption from me. you probably know what's coming. If you were listening to this on Patreon, you would be getting almost an hour of material. But because you're listening to this on Spotify, you're missing a nice conversation between James and Adrian Salmon concerning the artistic process, essentially. If you sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/Casterbras, you can for free get our episodes early, get them ad-free, and 9 times out of 10 with extra material, extra conversations, longer chats, more in-depth interviews. More and more people are joining our Patreon, which is really nice to see, so please join them. You get instantaneous notifications when the podcast is live. It appears straight in your app if you're using the Patreon app, and there is a paid option as well, which adds a few more physical, tangible bonuses and features to your membership. But for the podcast, our Patreon is free.
You know, there'll always be a market for these things, but, and I suppose, you know, and I'm being fair here, time, you know, it takes a lot longer, doesn't it, to do these things traditionally, and page rates have not exactly gone up at all in the last 10 years. So I suppose the only way you can sometimes make these things work is to do it faster digitally.
Well, yeah, but it's also for publishers as well. It's much easier for them if they, you know, if they've basically just got a file that's been sent to them, that's coloured up, the lettering's been put on. It's just, you know, there's no sort of bits of sticky tape and stuff, which we all like to look at on the original artworks. But just as a streamlining of the process, it's much more preferable. I mean, I remember being told that when I used to send artworks in, that Perry would have to kind of adjust the solid blacks when she'd scanned it or whatever she did. And it was always a bit of a pain in the arse and stuff. So they were really pleased when I started, sending in digital files. However, because I didn't understand scanning very well, I'd send in these artworks that were like, I'd got a really, really low resolution, but they were about 2.5 miles wide. So Perry could sort of reduce it down and still get away with it. It took me a few goes to actually understand scanning and stuff and the resolution and all the rest of it. But learning curves and all that.
Well, I remember the days of the A4 scanner and having A3 pieces and having to scan them in two and then put them onto Photoshop and try and line them up and remove the dirt. And
oh, I was doing that with the time teams. I mean, I had an A4 scanner at the time, and it didn't. The artwork was slightly bigger than that, so I'd have to scan them in two halves. And yeah, you put them together, and you think, shit, they don't bloody. Why is they not matching up? Because it should match up, because I've got the. So you'd be sort of tilting stuff and trying to get it to overlap right and fixing anything. That was all part of the process again. But I've now got an A3 scanner printer, so that kind of has made life somewhat easier, should we say. I just make sure that if I do anything really large, like a page of strip or something, It's within A3 because I used to work really large as Gareth will attest.
I've got some of your Cyberman pages, and they're enormous, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, that's the size that they used to do when I first started working for the magazine. They gave me the size of artwork they wanted, and they were these huge bloody things. But it was okay, because it's sort of, and I like that aspect of it, because it starts to become, you become less finicky, you know. It suited what I was doing, because you'd have this sort of really large canvas, so to speak, to work on. And it was, I drew like on pages that big for ages until Scott got me to reduce them down, because they suddenly started saying, oh, we need stuff at this size and this size. And so I just sort of, you know, accepted whatever they said and just did that. But it's anyway, everyone, I don't know what I'm saying now.
Oh, I mean, one of the things I've always liked about your work, Adrian, and I don't think I've ever asked you this, is, you know, I've got some on the wall, so I'm looking at, like, let's say the Ice Warriors, and I think I love the way you draw your Ice Warriors, and you kind of zoom in on one aspect. So the Ice Warriors, it's all about the clampy hands, isn't it? And they're, you make them kind of look outsized, and you know, and your Cybermen have, you know, they're sort of huge and powerful, and you know, what is it you look for in something, though? You latch on to something like the clampy hands, or you know, how does that process work for you?
It's part intuitive, it's part of feel. You know, I look at something and I sort of I look for parts that I can exaggerate, but not in a sort of caricature way. I'm not particularly fond of caricature as a style. But I look for just sort of things that I can sort of accentuate just the certain aspects of whatever the character is. The hardest ones, or just about the impossible ones to do, are Daleks, because the moment you start messing with them, they suddenly don't look like a Dalek anymore. They really are. The only ones I have found any joy changing them a little bit was those really, you know, those ones that were in the new series, those really big fat ones. Mm. The Paradigm ones, yes, they were great, because they sort of had, so you could really make them squat and stuff, and it still, they still worked. Whereas with the normal Dalek, you can't. But, you know, with a, I guess it's just, you just look at them. I just look at a design of something and just kind of draw it and draw it and draw it on bits of scraps of paper, because I'm not an artist that keeps sketchbooks or anything. I just work on bits of photocopy paper, really. And just, I don't want anything to feel particularly precious, you see. I want to, because before you get to the good stuff, you've got to draw a lot of crap, basically. And once you get past that, then you suddenly, something will just sort of click. I'll know when things are clicking. It's the same as when I start drawing something. I'll be drawing it, thinking, yeah, it's all right. And suddenly some little idea will come in your head, and you try something and you get really excited. Before you know it, you get into that zone and you just start drawing faster and faster. And then the bloody pencil lead breaks and you have to, and then, you know, before you know it, you've sort of, you know, after about an hour, that's it. It's like, okay, I've got all the really important stuff nailed, and the rest of it's just sort of finessing it. But I don't think I'd be a very good teacher, because I don't really think I can articulate it very well, to be honest.
Well, you're doing quite a good job there.
Have I? But it is. It's just, I don't know. It's just a... It's so many things. It's accumulation of years and years and years of not just drawing, but looking at art, just, you know, in its entirety, not just sort of, you know, illustration, but, you know, looking at, you know, I look at stuff like Cezanne and all sorts, and just looking for something different, you know, something that's not sort of has been seen before. I know it sounds sort of.
No. I think I did a podcast the other day with, and we were talking about you and you know, we were saying, you know, and your influences, you know, you spoke Mick McMahon and. But you know, I think this guy said there was a touch of the Pablo Picasso as well about your stuff, which I think that difference is brilliant, and I can see all them things sometimes in your book.
Well, I just, as I say, I look at lots of, you know, Klimt, Egon Schiele. I mean, I go through, I'm forever looking for, you know, the secret to success, should we say. which means that, you know, different artists, you know, it's back when I first started drawing, the people I wanted to really draw like were John Bolton and Bernie Wrightson, and Mick McMahon came along and kind of blew that up a bit because of his sort of very quite punk ethic type approach to work. But I think, and then Kirby, you know, I went through a big Jack Kirby phase.
Oh, I could definitely feel Kirby in your colouring. You know, that vibrant, bold, you know, primary colours, and there's nothing restrained about your colour, and I love that.
Yeah, I guess my colouring started when I was at college, because I used to do a lot of easel painting. I went to Manchester Poly to do illustration, and I did quite a lot of paintings of people like pop stars like David Bowie and stuff. And of course, those stage things were really, you know, subjectively lit rather than literal. So my colour sense sort of grew from that. And so I've always not sort of really just done the more naturalistic approach to colouring, because that kind of, you know, just doesn't suit what I do. And sometimes you just want to just be just anarchic for the sake of it, you know. You just think, well, yeah, nobody's done a red sea devil yet. Well, here we go, you know, or whatever. It's all sort of, I know I keep calling it intuitive, but it's kind of a learned intuition, I guess, over, you know, 40 years of drawing and looking at art.
How long's left of this campaign? When does it end?
It ends, I think, on the 29th of December, you know, in that weird bit in between Christmas and New Year where we no longer know what day it is. And, yeah.
My birthday's the 29th of December, and I've on several occasions, certainly over the past two decades, forgotten it's my birthday that day.
Yeah. Oh, it's my birthday. yeah, it's good. And we've got, honestly, I really, really, really hope we can get the extra stretch goals, because, you know, what have we got, Aid? We've got a VAM disc with a big interview with Aid we want to do, and then a digital slideshow of all the images, because we keep getting asked about digital, and I've said, no, it's an art book, that's the whole point. But I like the idea of a digital slideshow with Aid, just, you know, where we just chat over some of the pieces.
Yeah, we were going to just sort of just talk about them as the show, as the pictures came up.
I knew I had something to ask you. You know, when you reviewed all the time teams again, were there any that you'd completely forgotten doing?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yes. No, not really. Some of them are a little bit vague on some of the later Tom Baker stuff, but then I was never really that enamored of the later Tom Baker stuff, so that might explain that. Some of them are looking and go, shit, what's this story from? I have to kind of work it out, you know.
I can feel sometimes your enthusiasm waning through bits of Colin Baker, and but I think you do some of your great stuff for the Sylvester McCoy stuff. I think it's fantastic. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really good work, that.
Well, it's interesting, yeah. I hated Colin Baker's suit, you know, the costume and stuff.
Nobody just enjoys colouring that.
No, because it's just terrible. You just can't make it look cool or anything. It's just awful. And he's got this great big sort of curly clown hair, and it's just like, oh dear. But I mean, I did like Mel, though. I like drawing Mel. But you know that, yeah, by then I was sort of the McCoys are fun, because you'll probably notice there's a sudden change in the way I draw them to a much more rawer stuff. I'd got one of those, it's called a brush pen, which is just basically a pen with a brush end on it, and you know, but it just added a roughness to it. And so I started doing the McCoys that way. And they were, you know, I was getting enthusiastic response from the office and stuff. So I thought, oh, this is great. And then some beggar on bloody online sort of going, oh, he's not as good as he used to be. What happened to him? Or whatever. So I'm like, oh. you can't win sometimes. You kind of evolved away from that. Well, I would have anyway, because that's one of the things I do, is just I try these new ways of doing things, and they're great for a while, and then they sort of, you know, then I move on. At the moment, I feel like I've sort of gone full circle, because I'm looking at the ones we're doing, these new time teams. I want them to kind of sit with the old ones without being too jarring. So, but I realized as I was drawing them that I kind of can't go back. I can't become that person that I was but then drawing them. However, I can be a kind of a similar newer version. And so that's been fantastic. You know, it's been really liberating. Yeah.
And it was really, I mean, and you've got some amazing, I mean, the list of ones they missed off was ludicrous. Now I think back there, you've got some absolutely amazing. Which ones are you looking forward to drawing?
As we've discussed, Web of Fear, Moonbase, Plans of the Daleks. Actually, I'm really enjoying doing the Hartnell ones, because a lot of them I didn't really know what they were about. So what I decided to do, rather than just watch these sort of the Telestat reconstructions or something or whatever, I decided I'm going to read the Target novelizations to get another sort of angle on these stories. So I've been reading all these really early ones and really enjoying it, you know, sort of getting into it and seeing the differences between the books and what was shown on TV. Because one of the things I always like to do with these time teams, I like to sort of kind of extrapolate a bit on what I imagine that, you know, it would have happened. So, yeah. And also make it things not necessarily always bigger and sort of spanglier and stuff like that, but sort of just to make things, I don't know what the word is, just give it a personal twist, really.
I think there's a good example of that, and you were telling me about the Mythmakers, and we might as well share with the lovely listeners what you got in mind for the Mythmakers. And I haven't seen it, so I'm just imagining it, but it sounded excellent.
Yeah, with the Mythmakers, but there was really, I knew I couldn't not do the horse, because the horse is the big iconic thing. There's only two photographs of it that exist, but I wanted to show it being towed into Troy, basically through the gates. But I wanted to have an element of obviously the doctor in there somehow. Now at the moment the doctor is inside the horse with Odysseus and the rest of the crew. However, the TARDIS is already in the city, so we've got the TARDIS in the background, and we've got all these sort of Trojans dragging this huge horse. And I'm going to try and get it'll be quite small, but we'll have Hartnell peering out of the horse's eye right high up. So that's what we're doing for that one. So it should be fun.
Yeah, I think maybe what Gareth was trying to get towards, you add a kind of a level of drama into scenes that didn't have that drama and urgency.
I guess I do. Yeah. I mean, I do like to, you know, I do go for the dramatic scenes where I can. It all depends what the story is, really. And what appeals to me, I mean, like when I did the Sensorites, you know, I had them doing their mind thing, and I showed it literally with like circular, concentric circles coming out of their heads, sort of beaming away, which obviously you didn't see on screen, but it worked in that respect. So, it depends what I decide to do. In the story, really. Yeah. Some of them are literal, quite literal, and some of them are quite quite graphic in approach, you know. I mean, I'm doing the Smugglers at the moment, and Smugglers is going to be fairly cartoony, I think, because we've got so many great characters in it, like Cherub with his, you know, he's got a great face and stuff. Yeah. And we're doing a scene where they're they're on the, well, the doctor's been taken onto the ship, and he's in the captain's cabin, and Captain Pike, I think it's his name, is it Pike? Yeah. Smacks down. He's got like a bloody harpoon stuck on his on his hand. Instead of a hand, he's got this great vicious looking hook thing. So I thought, I'm going to have that in there. Yeah. And then we have Cherub sort of with a knife raised, pointing at the doctor, and the doctor looking really smug, basically, you know, with his hands on his lapels, like, you know, not being intimidated in the slightest. And then behind him, we've got, is it Jamaica, the other character, the black pirate guy. Forgotten his name.
Jamaica?
Yeah, Jamaica. Yeah, he's in it as well. And so it's inside the, yeah, so that's that, that that's, this is going to be quite a sort of a cartoonish one, because I don't like them to all be the same, you know, because they never were.
And I suppose this is a crossover with all the work you did on the animations all those years. So I remember you telling me that the Smugglers was weirdly on your must-have list, and I remember thinking, okay, because it doesn't really come alive as an audio, but I guess that, you know, you're looking beyond that when you're doing these, you know, when
well,
you're
I always thought with the Smugglers on an animation that you could really do a sort of a real lots of beautiful sunsets and colours and stuff, you know, with the landscape, and just give it that really romantic-y sort of period-y feel.
Yeah.
Even though in the actual story, it really just revolves around a pub and and that bloody church or whatever. Oh, and there's beach, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's.
But isn't something like the Smugglers, you know, I mean, I remember Charles would always, you know, Charles Norton always famously said, you can't do the Highlanders because of the tartan and the kilts and the number of characters. Yes. But then you guys were talking seriously about the Smugglers, which, as far as I remember, is like an extended sword fight for basically part four.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. It is. And it's quite brutal as well. I mean, they probably have to. I mean, there's the death of Jamaica for a start. That's where the captain sort of wipes the bloodied blade afterwards. And of course, the bits that were that we've still got that exist that were the Australian censors chopped out of Cherub killing. Oh, I've forgotten his name. Anyway,
Joe Longfoot.
Yeah, that's him. That's him. Yeah, it is quite, but a lot of those, there's lots of bits of nastiness in the early, the heart also. I mean, someone gets their eye poked out in the Myth Makers for a start. And so then he's called Cyclops. I mean, it's quite brutal. Interesting, with the target novelization, it's actually narrated by Homer. And Homer that's where he gets his eye poked out by Odysseus, so he has one eye there. So he says, "Oh, I'll call you Cyclops from now on." But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. But no, it's a lovely, project, and you know, it's a dream, and you know, if it works, we'll be back hopefully for volume two, and we've already started chatting about other fabulous projects which we can't divulge at the moment, but if they come off, they'll be amazing, won't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. It would be lovely to do a follow up volume to this.
I'll be keeping Adrian going into his 70s.
Yes. Sadly, that's only going to be about 10 years, so you can keep me going till then. And I'll try and keep up with you, Gareth.
We've got lots of words. I mean we haven't even talked about the Happiness Patrol comic yet, which
we've done six pages of that already, haven't we?
Yeah, in the works. that's going to Kickstarter early next year. So
well, how about you both come back on and talk about that closer to the time, and then we can make an episode of it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That would be really good.
Excellent. Brilliant. So that is the new Time Team Unearthed that's on Kickstarter now for you to back, and it ends on the 29th of December. Thank you very much to Gareth Cavanagh and Adrian Salmon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbis. James and I will be back next week with a Christmas-themed edition. Beyond that, if you are planning to back the Time Team Unearthed, you will find the link to the Kickstarter in our show notes. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.